With us once again from Penn State Cooperative Extension, Master Gardener Tom Ford. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Doug.
And if you have any questions, earlier is better than later in the program, and we will be happy to take your calls. And even if it's on some topic that we have not brought up, that's exactly what we'd want you to call for, so we can help you out with stuff like that. Question in my mind is, we had, I guess, okay amount of snow. We sort of were, complaining about it when we had to shovel it or plow it or anything like that or drive through it. Did we have enough snow this year? And also, some people are, good night, you'd think that it was the end of the world that it's raining, and maybe if you're the Altoona Curve and you want to get back to playing baseball tomorrow night and your fingers crossed for that they might still be able to do it. That's an inconvenience there. But are we getting enough rainfall for this time of year?
In actuality, we could probably use a little bit more rain, so this should be a good week for us. We were actually pretty dry. I had been working in my own garden areas over the last couple of weeks, and it was a situation, if you didn't provide some supplemental watering on some new transplants, you were in trouble. But with rainfall, there are some other consequences. So we do need the rain. We look at the snow cover, we're probably could have used a little bit more, again, mainly for the moisture recharge aspect of things. We saw that we had a pretty good fire danger over the last couple of weeks. So in reality, I would like to see a little bit more moisture. But the downside of rain, especially when you get new growth emerging, is disease pressure. Disease pressure, we think of things like a disease like anthracnose, okay? Anthracnose hits a lot of our major shade trees, and even though it will not kill the large shade trees, we'll pay for it later on when we start to see a lot of leaves drop prematurely, or we may even see some blighting of trees like sycamore, where the leaves blight right from the beginning. People will be calling the offices and be very worried about their sycamores because every leaf will brown, wither, and die, and it looks like the sycamore is dying. And then the other one that we're dealing with is that a lot of our pines and our spruce trees, a lot of our conifers, okay, we have had problems with needle cast from the last 2 to 3 springs. And as we get very wet weather again, what actually will happen is we'll see an increase in needle cast diseases. So what that, I guess, it creates for the home gardener is kind of enough disease pressure out there that, spruce trees and pines, they don't take defoliation. An oak gets a little anthracnose, it loses a few leaves. A sycamore loses its leaves, they'll come back. But if a conifer ends up with a needle cast and it loses 80 to 90% of the foliage, it may keep progressing downhill till it dies.
Go over what needle cast is again.
Yeah, needle cast are fungal diseases, and the worst cases right now are on Douglas fir. Throughout Altoona, okay, I've had really dozens of clients contact us, contact the master gardeners, and what they're concerned about is that their Douglas fir foliage is very, very sparse. The only needles that are intact are at the tips of the plant, and when you look back further, all the inside needles have shed. So as that new growth emerges this spring, unless you protect it with the fungicide, then you will see another infection period, and then you will see, again, more needles drop off late summer into early fall, and by spring of 2022, we'll see, again, some significant damage to those trees to the point where aesthetically they become a liability or they just become so weakened that they die. And then the problem that a home gardener has is once the tree gets over 20 feet tall, how do you spray it?
Yeah. With a crane.
Right. And so when you look at bringing a professional in, okay, and I got a lot of the people that have mature landscapes, maybe from the standpoint in some cases, maybe on fixed incomes and such as far as in the Altoona market. Well, each treatment cost may be $150 a tree.
Yeesh.
And so if you have to treat 2 to 3 times because, every time you apply a fungicide, you get a heavy rain, it washes off. You just can't make one treatment. So you typically have to make 2 to 3 treatments. And so you're talking maybe $450 a tree. You have 10 trees, you're at $4,500.
Man, I can see why some people let them go.
Right, and so the other thing that happens is that property owners then say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to cut those trees down. Can you recommend another evergreen that's fast-growing that doesn't get needle-cast? And, you know, that's becoming a very difficult proposition as far as what to recommend to people, because a lot of the conifers that we normally would grow in our area, they can have issues. Even some of the best, you know, with the wrong weather pattern, we can end up seeing disease in those trees and have an issue that may require some type of treatment.
We're talking with Master Gardener Tom Ford from Penn State Cooperative Extension, 814-946-0435. And I get the feeling that this call may play into some of what you were just discussing here. Dan in Altoona is back talking about some problems he's had with trees of late, correct?
You're absolutely right. Good morning, Tom and Doug. Well, you just got through saying you played right in my hands. And now I have blue spruce. What's the difference between blue spruce and Douglas?
Well, the disease that hits blue spruce is typically a disease called Rhizospira needle cast, okay? And Rhizospira is primarily a spring infection period, though it will at times infect in the fall of the year as well. So if your trees are out in the open with good air circulation around them, you know, the key is how long the foliage stays wet. So the better the air circulation, typically the less disease pressure. But as they grow together and get very mature, or if they're very, very dense, then the tendency is that you may start to see more needle cast pressure with them. Trees that are, you know, high dollar trees that, you know, are really instrumental in the landscape, you know, it may be something where prophylactically they should be treated with a fungicide.
Okay, now, I'm about to lose my fifth blue spruce in probably 7-8 years. Now, it's dying. There's no question about it. It's dying. It was perfectly healthy for 8 years. It didn't grow like the rest of them, but it was healthy up until March. I noticed in March, all winter, it was good. In March, there was in a certain section, just a small section, it had a brown spot on a couple branches, and then as the days progress, it just getting worse and worse and everything. So I'm losing it. There's no question about it.
Well, one of the first things we want to do is make sure we diagnose the problem correctly to begin with. So, needle cast can be very devastating. But what we often encourage first off is to start off with submitting a sample to the Penn State Plant Disease Clinic. Okay? That is free. It's just going to cost you your mailing cost, and we actually recommend that samples be sent through UPS rather than the Postal Service because of delivery, okay? It'll get there fresher, faster. From Altoona, you email something on Monday, it's at the lab 2 o'clock on Tuesday with UPS. So we all have samples, all of the extension educators, master gardeners, that we send everything because it gets there quicker. Now, the extension office is not probably the best way to get the sample to the lab right now. If you go and Google Penn State Plant Disease Clinic, up will pop the website, and they'll have a section there for plant disease submission forms. You print out the plant disease submission form. You fill it out. There's also another site there where it talks about how to take your sample. But you package your sample with the form, put it in a box, send it through UPS, send it to the lab. And what the lab will do is they will culture it out, and they'll make a determination what the disease is. That way you don't have to worry about COVID and drive into the office and everything else and worried about that. You can actually do it from your home. Download the form, fill it out, send your sample through UPS to the lab, and then what will happen is a report that is will be generated from the lab and then sent back to you, which will tell you exactly what you need to do to hopefully either save the specimen or protect the ones next to it, okay? So that's the best way to get this diagnosed.
Is that out in Martinsburg?
No, it's not out in Martinsburg. What you do is, because the offices are closed still because of COVID, okay, we actually request that you download the form from the Penn State website, fill out the form, and then mail the sample yourself to you through UPS.
Now, the trees are spread way apart. They get plenty of wind and air and everything, and they're far apart.
Well, the tree that concerns me is the one that has died. So is it a location where others have died, or is this one of the original trees that went in?
No, it's about 25 feet from the other one that died, and it's just a shame because.
How long has that one been in the ground?
8 years.
Yeah, that you're dealing with a needle caster disease issue. It's nothing else beyond that.
Dan, Tom, I just want to know, did you have somebody professionally plant it for you? And I'm not saying that the warranty would last, 8-9 years later, but I'm just curious.
Well, no, I dug the hole, and then the nursery come and they set it, and then I covered it back in. See, so I didn't physically put it in the ground, and now they delivered it. And they unwrapped it and put the ball in the ground, and then I covered it up, and then the first 2 years I watered it pretty good, and then they took off all but two. I lost one, and it was guaranteed. So they come and replaced it. Mm-hmm. And then another one, there were three in that spot, and all three of them went. And now I'm dealing with the fifth one now. It's dying. But my concern is, with the wind and everything, will it spread to the other three that are completely healthy?
Well, that's why it needs to be diagnosed appropriately. And a sample needs to be submitted to the lab is what really needs to happen to see if it is rhizosphere needle cast or cytosphere canker or what's going on. Because a tree that's been in the ground 8 years shouldn't be up and dying unless it's a disease issue. Okay, and so we do need to get the bottom of it one way or another. It's beyond transplant shock. It's beyond a transplant issue or a planting issue. So you're definitely looking at this point in time, probably more of a pest or disease issue. And I would lean more towards a disease issue, because pests usually will cause like nuisance type injury, some aesthetic damage, but rarely kill the entire plant.
Now, should I get a hold of an arbor and have him come?
You could get a professional to come out, but, unless they submit a sample to the plant disease clinic, they're guessing. Okay? As good as we are as trained, I'm thinking of myself, but I'm also thinking of the professionals in the industry. The only way you definitively know is let the lab take a look at it, because they have either techniques that they can either culture it out. So, example, if you have a needle cast, they may be able to determine it by what the spores look like on the leaf. But if there are no spores on the needle, then they have to basically kind of encourage what they call sporulation, and then come back 2 weeks after it's in culture to see what type of spores are being developed.
Okay.
Sometimes you just can't walk past it or grab a handful of needles and diagnose it. If they are, they are basically probably BSing you, and nobody's that good.
Yeah. Okay, now, Tom, when I clip it and put it in the box, now, should this one, Just one place on the tree, or would you do it three or four places?
I would do any of the sections of the growth that are showing the injury, okay? And I would put them in a paper bag, okay? Not a plastic bag, because if they're a plastic bag, they will typically, moisture will come out of the needles because they're still transpiring, and then the sample will rot in transit. So put them in a paper bag, put a paper towel with them to absorb any moisture, and then fill out the information sheet, and then send that to the plant disease clinic at Penn State.
Okay, but there's no growth on this tree.
Doesn't matter. As long as you got some needles that are intact, they should be able to make a determination, because there should be either dark brown spots or black spots or banding or yellowing. They may see structures on the needle, on the bark itself. But try to take what we call a representative sample that shows that type of growth, that sort of shows the injury symptoms, and then send that to the lab.
Dan, we got to let you go. One final question.
About 6 inches long, clip?
I would take 6 to 8 inches long, and if there's shoots, anything that's showing any type of symptoms, take a small sample of it and send it to the lab.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Dan, best of luck with that. We're with Master Gardener Tom Ford. We'll continue after the break.
If we're not talking about it, it hasn't happened yet.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind.
Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA.
Now, here's the final story.
Spring into savings at Dean Patterson Chevrolet. Lease the 2021 Traverse all-wheel drive 1LT. Pay $399 for 36 months. The 2021 Trax all-wheel drive LS. Pay $229 for 36 months. And the 2021 Trailblazer all-wheel drive. $295 for 36 months. Put $2,500 down on any one of these vehicles and your first payment and fees are covered. All incentives and conquest rebates included with 2007 or newer trade of a non-GM product. Spring into savings with Dean Patterson Chevrolet, 101 Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona.
Champion Roofing, home on the lifetime warranty. Residential and commercial, call for a free estimate today. 814-414-8183. Metal, shingle, and flat roofs. 814-414-8183. Champion Roofing.
Champion Roofing. The champs. Champion Roofing. We're the solution. Champion Roofing. The champs. Champion Roofing. We're the solution.
You can count on the roofing pros. Our roots run deep and our integrity shows. Proud to serve you, we love what we do. With Champion's unbeatable warranties too.
Champion, Champion Roofing, the champs. Champion Roofing, we're the solution.
Time for a new preset in your car. WRTA can now be heard on 98.5 FM.
814-946-0435, Talk Radio 98.5, WRTA, the 11th hour, Doug Herendeen. And we have Master Gardener Tom Ford from Penn State Cooperative Extension. Julian from Altoona has a question with Tom Ford. Good morning.
Good morning. Did you get my email by chance? I just sent one a minute ago of some type of weed, I think, that I saw grow, and I noticed it last year. And I'm not quite sure what it is, but I'm starting to notice some more and more. It's like a purple in the center, and then it has like these almost lavender color like spikes. I'm just not sure what it is.
Yeah, Julian, whose email did you send it to?
I sent it to mine here. I'm going to forward it to you.
Okay.
And that's, well, we'll see how fast it takes to get there.
Yeah, I just want to know what they are, because I just noticed them last year.
Oh, I've seen these around.
Yeah, and I thought, what the heck is that? I just noticed them.
I actually sent a picture of something like this to Tom last summer when I was out walking and I saw this.
Yeah, last year is the first year I saw them, and now, this year, they're trying to move further up the yard, so now it's like,
Well, hopefully it isn't kudzu, but I don't think it is. Tom, did you get the email there?
Let me check. I wasn't at my computer, but I will move to my computer real quick.
Yeah, it's like an army mounting an offensive at this point. Like last year, they appeared and tried to manage it. Now they're starting to move up and
this
up.
Looks like I'll post it on our Facebook page, but it sort of looks like spearmint-shaped leaves, and then you've got green, and then you've got almost a purplish color and little pink flowers along with it. It seems, or at least flower buds right now.
Yeah, and I just wonder what it is. I hope it's not a new invasive species or something.
Okay, let's see. Yeah, it's actually one of the members of the mint family. It looks like dead nettle. Is what it looks like off the top of my head.
Dead nettle. But it's not dead. It's the name of it, though.
Right. It's one that we normally will see in like fields and stuff like that, typically. From a weed standpoint, it's very prolific as far as the amount of seed. So it's not an exotic or anything, okay? It's not something that I guess you say is not it's observed frequently, probably more frequently in cornfields and things like that than anything else. But it belongs to the same family as henbit and ground ivy, which are two other common ones we see. It's typically of the mint family as well.
Yeah, because it looks like spearmint or mint to me here. And by the way, I just looked up dead nettle. If you want to buy one on this particular website I went to, it's only $24.99. So.
Oh, yeah. I shouldn't be able to give those things away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's technically what we call purple dead nettle.
How do I get rid of them?
Just in the lawn area?
Yeah.
Okay. It's first off, it's a winter annual, okay? So since it's in bloom now, the seeds are already set, okay? Ideally, the control would be prior to it flowering, okay, from the standpoint as far as herbicides go.
Okay.
From an herbicide standpoint, probably going to have to go with something containing dicamba. That's a post-emergent, though, or a 2,4-D plus dicamba type material. I don't think 2,4-D will touch it by itself. Okay.
Do you have any name brands?
I'm trying to look at some name brands. Well, if you go, we'll go really overkill here, where you're actually going to throw three chemistries in at one time. A product like Trimec, T-R-I-M-E-C.
Okay.
Okay. Trimec is 2,4-D, typically plus dicamba plus micoprop, or MCPP. You don't necessarily need all three, but it's not going to hurt in that it'll also work on chickweed, a lot of the other, quote, broadleaf winter annuals that are up there. We think of a hairy bittercrest is another one that's out there. The key is try to get it on before they begin to bloom. And because okay. Once they, because their seeds on them are, again, what they belong to the same family as coleus. And Doug will know what I'm talking about when you see the flowers of coleus. The seeds are very hard, black, very, very tiny. And if they bounce around on the soil surface, they'll sit there, they'll pop as soon as we get cool weather and moisture, typically late fall, early spring, and then, of course, the full flowering potential right now. So the key is, though, is you've got to hit them before they're actively, you know, flowering to get your best control.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
Or just to tell you, I was looking at another article here based on what Tom was saying, and it says that they are edible. The edible weed that's likely growing in your backyard or somewhere nearby and has medicinal purposes, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking, I wouldn't be just eating anything that's grown in my backyard that I didn't plant. Maybe I'm strange that way. Tom?
Well, that family in particular, there's a lot of members of that family which are edible. When we think about everything from mint juleps on down the line to the various mint teas that are out there. But there are also some members of the family, while edible, are also hallucinogenic. So
I don't think you want to be doing that, because I'm looking here and there are several different, there's some of the dead nettle that look like exactly like the picture that Julian sent us, and there are some that look quite different, but at least they look like they're related. Again, if I didn't plant it, I'm not going to be eating it, so...
Well, the way you always look at that family is you look for the square stems. Any plant that's got square stems is a member of the mint family. And so some of them have stinging hairs, some have hallucinogenic properties. But the big thing that they're all good for is that they're all very prolific from a seeding standpoint and taking over areas. Okay.
So in a way it is kudzu. It's going to just invade.
Right, and of course we see it like a ton of times in no-till cornfields too, and we control it there. Of course, the chemistries, but in a lawn situation, 2,4-D dicamba, or like we said, 2,4-D dicamba Mica Proptech mix, a two-way or a three-way type product should give you control, but you want to hit it before it blooms.
Tom, you wanted to say a few more things about that particular weed there that we were talking about, the purple dead nettle.
In response to Julian, we're talking about treatment. We talked about treating in the spring before it blooms. It actually will start germinating in about October. So depending on our weather pattern, if the weather is conducive, we don't go into, freezing conditions and plants are still actively growing, you could actually treat it in mid to late October, as long as it's actively growing and it has germinated. But it's actually easier to control in that October window if the weather patterns will allow.
Yeah, from the pictures that he sent, though, it's already got the little blooms on it. They just haven't blossomed yet.
Yeah, well, I have some in my own yard, and mine had been blooming for about 3 to 4 weeks. So the planting, like I said, there were what we call warm season grass. I got some zoysia in an area, and again, we should not plant zoysia. I inherited it. Yeah. And so where the zoysia grows, that's where I have pretty much most of my purple dead nettle growing. And it will go about 4 to 4.5 inches in height and just make this beautiful carpet of purple. So it is pretty, but unfortunately it will keep expanding over time. So the best time to control it, though, would be before it blooms or, say, that mid to late October period while it's just starting to germinate. But the problem is if it hadn't germinated yet, and you'll put the herbicide down in that October period, you won't get control at all because those herbicides only work on emerged plants, live plants. They have no effect on seed at all.
Well, looking at this, and maybe I'm being naive here, but people spend a lot of money on sedum, and this thing is not cheap when I'm seeing people actually buying it online. Maybe you could, if you can contain it, is it possible to do that if you have it in certain areas that are bricked off, or is this just going to run roughshod over everything?
It'll pretty much run roughshod, and there are better plants. As a winter annual, technically it will die out, okay? It'll die out over the summer as the weather gets warmer. So it's not like a perennial. There are members of that family that are perennial that we will use as ground covers. Mm-hmm. So it's a situation as if I wanted to go with a member of that mint family. There's some that have very beautiful variegated foliage, nice blossoms, creeping habit. One that I think is called Beacon Silver. It's got a silver leaf and a pinkish bloom. That's much, much better if you're looking for something in a garden or perennial border because they are perennial in nature. They're not going to die out once the weather gets warm.
As far as the actual mint family, I can still remember my grandmother used to have actual spearmint growing in her backyard, and this was a novelty to me as a little kid. You just reach down, pick off a leaf, and chew it. And sure enough, it was spearmint. It was a lot better than Wrigley's, too. Unfortunately, the 72 flood came, and you weren't going to have anything out of that yard for a while. But, just something to keep in mind, I guess. 814-946-0435, talking with Master Gardener Tom Ford on WRTA. Ray in Altoona, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I got a little convoluted question here for Mr. Ford.
All right.
I knew an individual lived in the city of Altoona. He had maybe a 25-foot lot. He was a member, if I recall correctly, of a National Habitat Society where he could grow native species. And it had to be verified, and he received a plaque for that, to maintain it, and that's what he was doing.
Cool.
Are you familiar with that, sir?
No, I am not. There are various native plant groups that are out there, but I'm not familiar with that one, no. There's actually a certified backyard habitat program through Audubon, but as far as a specific one, there's some bird-friendly habitat, and then also some of the National Wildlife Federation has a wildlife habitat certification for gardens. And again, of course, all the native plant societies that are out there as well. But I'm not familiar with the specific certification programs.
Could you give me a... I don't have a computer. Could you give me some way to research this? Mailing?
Okay.
I have to wonder once... Well, I don't know. Considering the library is technically open downtown, it's just relocated for a while to the parking garage. Whether they'd still have some way to look things up for you, or if you give them a call, maybe they can help you there too. Or Tom, what do you think?
Well, there is a native plant, the Pennsylvania Native Plant Society. I can give you a phone number.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, well, I'd appreciate that, sir.
And they're actually, they don't have a phone number, but they do have an address. Okay.
Okay. This is the Pennsylvania, what?
Yeah, Pennsylvania Native Plant Society.
All right.
And actually, their headquarters is in Bowlesburg, so it's close.
Oh, wow.
All righty. Okay.
So it's P.O. Box 807.
All right. P.O. Box, wait a minute. I'm writing this.
Okay.
807.
Bowlesburg, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
16827.
Okay, so this is P.O. Box 807, Bowlesburg. PA 16827.
That is correct.
Thank you very much, sir.
It's the Pennsylvania Native Plant Society. I'm sure, I know they do events and such, and they promote, of course, conservation of native plants and habitats that basically support native plants. So they would be a good one. And of course, they have a lot of the quote, buy native. Recommendations that are out there for plant material.
Well, that's what I'm looking for flowers and for the monarch butterfly and whatnot. So thank you.
Sure. Anytime.
Ray, thanks very much. And I was not aware of that, so thanks for asking about it. That's one more thing that we've learned here today. With Master Gardener Tom Ford, 946-0435, we have, let me see here, Ann in Newry. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what can we do you out of?
Well, I've been wanting to ask Tom, what is loam and where can I find it?
Loam on the range. Now that's something else.
Yeah, and loam, all loam is basically it's, sand, silt, and clay in specific proportions, okay? So when we think of topsoil, often what we're considering typically is that to be a loam from that respect, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do would be for somebody that would have, quote, a good quality topsoil.
Okay, because I've had topsoil before, and it must not be good quality.
Yeah,
I always thought loam was something that was really rich, dark, that you could put around your flowers. Now, my husband says he thinks compost is the best idea.
Well, let's go to loam first, and we'll go to compost, okay? So what they basically look at is by weight, to have a designation as loam, it has to be 40% sand, 40% silt, and 20% clay. That is the, quote, legal definitional loam, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the coloration is not always the best key, because what gives a soil its dark color is the way called the parent material, what it's derived from, and also the organic matter that may be in there. So I know I've shared this with Doug before. We know that people buy soil based on coloration. Mm-hmm. They buy mulch based on coloration. So often what they'll do is they can take the worst possible soil, and if they blend it with compost or dehydrated manure or other materials that give a dark color, they can then get more money for it per cubic yard.
Mm.
But what they're selling you may not be better than what you already have on your property, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's always a concern. And in some cases, it can be worse than what you have on your property.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to improve existing soil, a good quality compost is the best way to do it, okay?
Okay.
But you want to make sure that if you purchase compost, that see if you can get some analysis from someone to see, you know, what is in the compost. And one of the problems we have with compost is that sometimes the salt levels are too high, and if you use a large amount of it, it can actually kill the plants that you're trying to promote.
Okay.
So
well, here's what I'm thinking, Tom.
Okay.
I'm thinking that at the recycling center,
mm-hmm.
people go there to get compost.
Right.
And most times people say it's pretty good, although once in a while you have something in there, you know, that you need to toss out.
Well,
something that isn't soil.
Yeah, I'm not sure if in their situation, if they do any testing or not to see that they can give you some usage guidelines. But
uh-huh.
usually with compost, we'd like to know what some of the properties are, okay? Because how it's handled determines how it can be used. Now, give you an example. There is a compost product that comes out of the State College area, and it is, derived from biosolids, sludge, okay?
Okay.
Well, we know, for the most standpoint, we know all the chemical properties. We know what the pH of the material is. We know what the salt levels are. We know, based on that, we know exactly what the rate can be used to apply it. I
mm-hmm.
can't tell you specifically from the compost site as far as what the rate of application will be without knowing what the analysis is. The same
mm-hmm.
thing with mushroom substrate, mushroom soil. A lot of
mm-hmm.
home gardeners love mushroom soil. But in saying that, you know, it can contain a high salt level. And if you use it too heavily, then those salts can become damaging to the plant material. So a lot of times with when we're using like mushroom substrate, we only will recommend like a light top dress, about a quarter inch, half inch, and then mix that in, rototill that into the soil. So I can't address the compost from the compost site, but usually that is coming from leaf litter, composted leaves, some green matter, typically from lawns and grass clippings and that sort of thing. So
mm-hmm.
normally it's going to have a high pH around 7.1 to 7.2. Okay? So in that respect, it should be able to use on most things. You would never want to use it around potatoes. Okay?
Okay.
And because of the high pH, you would not want to use it around blueberries, azaleas, rhododendrons, mountain laurel, Japanese Andromeda, or anything that requires a very low pH, even like eastern white pine. But if you're just using it around perennial flowers or most vegetable crops, it would be fine. Just never around potatoes, because in potatoes, it's going to encourage potato scab.
And we have to go, but thank you very much. We'll continue with Tom Ford.
The opinions you hear on WRTA are the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of the station, its management, or advertisers.
Here's Bud Blackie from J&P Automart.
Back in 2008, I transferred from the old Bud Mart to J&P Automart. I've been at J&P Automart selling pre-owned automobiles for over 12 years.
J&P Automart, Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona.
So come in and see me, Bud Blackie at J&P Automart.
JNPAutomart.com.
Mother's Day will be here soon, and our moms are so important in our lives.
But moms are not just moms. She's a teacher, a cook, a chauffeur, a daycare, our best friend, and so much more. Let's reward her for everything she has done with a special gift of jewelry from Dorman's Jewelry in Altoona.
Choose from mother's rings and pendants with a choice of birthstones, photo engraved pendants and lockets, bracelets and earrings, and so much more.
Diamonds are up to 50% off. Citizens watches at 25% off. from the only authorized Elite Citizens Watch dealer in the area, with the largest selection. Dorman's will even wrap your gift for free.
Remember Mom on Mother's Day with a special gift, a gift she will cherish for many years to come. A gift from Dorman's Jewelry, 712 Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona. Where will you find the perfect gift for your mom? The answer is always Dorman's.
If you're an attorney who struggles with the balance of managing your practice and practicing law, consider Lexicon as your number one pick. From client intake to billing and all that comes in between, Lexicon doesn't miss a thing. Our comprehensive solution combines best-in-class software and services to take care of your firm's most critical challenges, automating many of the tasks that take time out of your day. It's all about giving you more of your billable hours back. And who doesn't love more revenue? No more searching for practice management that works. Lexicon marks the spot. Visit lexiconservices.com to learn what Lexicon can do for you.
Hello, I'm a unicorn. Yes, one of those. Everyone's tried to find me, but most can't, unless they're ZipRecruiter. If you've hired before, you understand it's quite hard to find a unicorn. You know, someone who's perfect for your role. So how does ZipRecruiter do it so quickly? ZipRecruiter's technology matches your job up with the right people for your role and invites them to apply, so you get brilliant candidates fast.
Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/trial.
Looking for employment or a job change? Go to the Work It Wednesday page at WRTA.com and see who's hiring. Click on the Work It Wednesday banner daily and see a list of area businesses currently hiring with all of the contact info you'll need. See jobs from Spherion of Altoona, Bedford and Johnstown, Cove Shoe Factory, Martinsburg, and Del Grosso's Park and Laguna Splash. Want to post a job? Just click on the Advertise tab. Find out who's hiring with Work It Wednesday at WRTA.com.
It's like 4K for your radio. Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA.
With Master Gardener Tom Ford, and we have just a few minutes left here on the 11th hour. Jeff in Roaring Spring, you had a question about bagworms.
Yes, I'd like to know when to watch for them and what to apply.
Okay. Bagworms were starting to hatch out in early June.
Okay.
So normally I say let's go about June 15th. From a control standpoint, what's the evergreen that they're on?
I think it's
arborvitae.
Arborvitae, that's it, yes.
Okay. Usually we try to use either a synthetic pyrethroid insecticide, okay?
Right.
You can technically use Sevin, S-E-V-I-N. Actually Sevin today is different than the Sevin from years back, but either one, whichever one is available. One has carbaryl in it,
yeah,
which is an organophosphate or a carbamate insecticide, and the other one actually contains, I think, cypermethrin, which is a synthetic pyrethroid. But that'll work on the homeowner market. Sevin works
right.
Real well as far as that is concerned. The other thing is Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew.
Yeah,
which is a spinosyn material. That's actually a little bit safer, both to you and the environment.
Oh, right.
So that's excellent. Again, about June 15th in the Roaring Spring area.
Yeah, and just start spraying, or is that a good idea?
If you see the presence of those little egg sacs on the ends of the branches,
right.
Each one of them can have 200 or 400 eggs in it.
Right.
So every one that's left, you know, that's going to contribute to the property.
Bad news. Yeah, they're nasty. I'll tell you, they look prehistoric, this damn thing.
Oh, yeah. An arborvitae, they can kill pretty much if they defoliate it. Arborvitae is the absolute worst one, but they'll hit pine, spruce, and pretty much any evergreen.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Well, thank you very much, both of you. Doug and Tom,
sure.
Take care.
Jeff, thank you very much. Tom, if people want to get in touch with you, how they do that?
Probably the best is email, tgf2@psu.edu, and I always encourage people to include a photograph if you can. Attach a photograph of what you're seeing out there in the landscape or garden. And then if you try to reach me by phone, my phone number is 814-472-7986.
Podcast of the program up later today on WRTA.com. Thanks, Tom.